Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, Save Me From Myself. This is 1 Samuel 25. Sometimes we just need other people to save us from ourselves, right? Because we aren't doing the right thing, even though they know that that's not the kind of person we are, that we want to do the right thing, but we're letting our emotions get control of us, and we're doing something, we're about to do something that we don't want to do. And they know that. And so it's always nice when we have people that love us enough to say, whoa, whoa, wait just a minute. You don't want to do that. It's not going to turn out good for you. You're going to feel bad about it later. And so let's just stop for a minute and think this through, do something different, right? It's always good to have people like that. And in our lesson today, God does this for David because he is about to do something that he would regret if he were to go through with it. But he also sends a woman to him to stop him. And so this woman is trying to save not only David from himself, but also her husband from himself. So this is a calm-headed woman in the middle of two hot-headed men. And Abigail's husband isn't even worth talking to, and so she has to take care of the whole instance herself. But David listens to Abigail. He is thankful that she has stopped him before he does something stupid. And obviously, that's the kind of person that we want to be, that listens to people that love us and that are trying to help us before we make a huge mistake. And so we begin chapter 25 with just the very first verse telling us that Samuel, the prophet, has died. And remember that he was first a priest, and then he became a judge and a prophet of the people. And so everyone in the whole nation loved Samuel, and he was also the one who anointed both Saul and David to be king of Israel. And so even though the nation is divided at this moment over Saul and David, they are not divided over Samuel. Everyone loves Samuel. And so the whole nation comes together, even Saul and David, to mourn the death of Samuel and to bury him. And so the first verse of chapter 25 tells us that Samuel died and they buried him in Ramah, which was his hometown. And then after that, Saul and David went back to, you know, doing what they were doing. Saul went back to his house and David went back to hiding from him. And it tells us that David went to the wilderness of Paran, which is in the northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula. So this is where he's hiding now. And he hears that there is a rich man in the town of Moen that is shearing him his sheep in the nearby town of Carmel. And so this is basically like a big town, and then the rural place where he would be able to work would be Carmel. And this man had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. So he was very rich. And David has encountered his shepherds in the fields, and he has, you know, taken them into his protection. And so it tells us that none of these men lost any sheep while David was protecting them. And so he hears that Nabal, that's this man's name, he is in Carmel shearing his sheep. And so he sends 10 of his messengers to Nabal to wish him peace, tell him what he's been doing for his shepherds, and then request that Nabal give him some food for his feast days. And so he sends the 10 men to Nabal, and they address him and say, peace be to you, peace be to your family, and peace be to everything that you have. And then they explain, hey, we encountered your shepherds in the fields, and my master, David, has been protecting them this whole time. And they haven't lost any sheep since they came under our protection. And we were wondering if maybe in return for the protection that we've been given to you, the kindness that we've given to your shepherds, that you would please give us any food that you may have to spare so that we can celebrate our feast days. And Nabal is like, "No, David," which is a lie because everybody knows David. David is the warrior that's been fighting on their behalf all of this time. So he knows who David is. But he's like, "I don't care. I almost feel betrayed by my shepherds for them, going to someone else to protect them. And so if they want to let David protect them, fine. But I'm not feeding you. I didn't ask you for any of this. And I don't even know your men. Why would I give them food?" And so the 10 messengers go back and report this to David, and David is furious. He's like, "I can't believe that I did, such a nice thing to him, and he can't even give us any food to enjoy our feast days." And so he gets 400 of his men, and they go out to attack Nabal. And he leaves 200 of his men there with the supplies. Now, in the meantime, one of Nabal's servants has run to Abigail and told her everything that happened. And he's like, "Hey, David's men came to Nabal and he was rude to them. And now I fear that our lives are in danger. And this man was good to us. He protected us. It was like a wall around us as long as we were with him." And all they asked was, one thing from Nabal, and Nabal was rude to them, and now our life is probably in danger. And so think about if there's anything that you can do for us because things are about to get bad. And Abigail doesn't even seem remotely surprised that her husband has been like this. The servant said, "I didn't go to him because he's not going to listen anyway." And so it seems as though everyone knows that Nabal is a difficult man to deal with. And so she sees no reason to go to Nabal and try to reason with him. Neither does the servant. She also knows that time is of the essence. And so she decides, "I'm just going to take care of this myself, and then I'll deal with Nabal later. I've got to save our, lives at this moment." And so she makes him 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 fig cakes. This is all of the food that Abigail prepares for David. And then she puts it all on donkeys, sends the messengers ahead of her so that they will get to David before David gets to Nabal. And then she says, "I'm hurrying behind because I want to speak to David myself." Now, in verse 21, it tells us that David, what David's thinking as he is about to attack Nabal. And he says, "Surely in vain I've protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing has been missing from all that belongs to him. And he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David if I leave one of the males that belongs to him alive by morning." And so, does this sound familiar that he is saying that Nabal has repaid evil for good? This happened to him with Saul, right? Saul was repaying David's good for evil. And when Saul did this to David, David repaid his evil with good. But when Nabal is doing it to him, he's like, "That's enough. I am not going to put up with this anymore. I keep treating people well, and they treat me bad in return. And this guy is not getting away with it." And so he sets out to fight Nabal, and Abigail sets out to stop him. And it says that she does meet him on his way to kill Nabal. And she immediately gets down from her donkey and bows down before him. And she does this first because she knows that her husband has disrespected David. And she wants David to know before she even speaks to him that she is not going to disrespect him and that she honors him instead. She's trying to, relay this right off the bat. that she has honor for him, even though her husband has disrespected him. And then when she begins talking to him, she takes full responsibility for everything that her husband's done. She's like, not even making excuses for him. She's like, I heard what my husband did, and I'm so very sorry for it. But I want you to know, I didn't know anything about it. If I would have known what your servants requested, I would have given it to you. She says, my husband is a foolish man, just as his name suggests. So apparently Nabal means fool. And she's like, he is not smart by doing this to you, and I'm very sorry. And then in verse 26, it says, now therefore, this is what Abigail says to him. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to do bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be as Nabal. Now this present, which your maidservant has brought to you, let it be given to the young men who follow you. Please forgive the trespass of your servant. For the Lord will certainly make you an enduring house, because you fight the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. Yet a man is risen up to pursue you and seek your life, but your life shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. It shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that has been spoken concerning you, and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to you, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that you have avenged yourself. And when the Lord has dealt well with you, then remember me. So she's also telling David, my husband may have acted as if he doesn't know who you are, but I know exactly who you are. You are the warrior who has been fighting for us on God's behalf. And you have also been relying on God to fight for you, because Saul has been trying to kill you and you've been trusting in God all of this time. And so I'm encouraging you to continue that. I want you to rise above Nabal's evil, just as you have been rising above Saul's evil. Don't let him make you stoop to his level, because God is going to give you the throne one day, and I don't want you to approach the throne with innocent blood on your hands, or be it being said of you that you didn't trust God enough to take care of you, and that you took matters into your own hands and avenged yourself. I don't want you to be feeling, you know, guilty for all that you have done in this matter. And so don't let him get to you. That's not the kind of man that you are. And so even though David had sworn to kill Nabal, this is his response to Abigail. This is verse 32, and it says, blessed is the Lord God of Israel, who sent you to me this day to meet me. Blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you've kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, surely by morning light, no males would have been left to Nabal. And so David received from her hand what she had brought to him. And he said, go up in peace to your house. See, I've heeded your voice and I've respected your person. And so Abigail has convinced David that he does not need to return Nabal's evil for evil. He needs to do what he's been doing with Saul and trust that God is the one that's going to take care of him, that he doesn't need to get revenge from his enemies because God is going to do that for him. And so she has appealed to the kind of man that she believes he is. And it's convinced David. David's like, you're right. That's not the kind of man I am. Remember, that's what we talked about last week, is that the reason that David did not return Saul's evil for evil is not because Saul didn't deserve it, but because David didn't want to be that kind of person. And so Abigail is coming to him and she's saying, that isn't the person you are. You are not an evil person. Nabal is, but it's not your job to deal with him. Same as with Saul. And so I don't want you to approach the throne with a guilty conscience, innocent blood on your hands, not trusting God to take care of you, but doing it yourself. And David says, thank you. You're right. That is exactly the kind of person that I want to be, exactly the person that I really am. And I was just letting Nabal get the better of me. And so I'm not going to do this. I want you to go home and, you know, leave in peace. I'm not going to kill anyone. But I would have if you wouldn't have stopped me. So thanks be to you for stopping me, and thanks be to God for sending you to me. And so then it tells us that Abigail gets home and finds out that Nabal has had this great feast. They said the feast of a king. And so, you know, he obviously had plenty of food to give to David, but he is having this feast and he is totally drunk at this moment. And so she's like, yeah, this is not a good time to tell him everything that has happened. And so she doesn't say anything to him about it at all that evening. And she waits until the next day when she sees that he's sober. And then she tells him everything that has happened. And this is what it says in verse 37, that his heart died within him and he became like stone. And then he died 10 days later. And so he had a paralyzing stroke, a stroke that turned his body to stone, made it where he couldn't move anymore. And then he died 10 days later of the shock of this, of how close he was to death. We don't really know. But what we do know is that God caused this to happen. God is the one who, repaid Nabal's evil. And David didn't have to. And so it says, when David found this out, he blessed the Lord for repaying his, enemy. And so in verse 32, it says, blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wicked on Nabal on his own head. So God returned his evil, and David is thanking him. David is so glad that he did not do this thing and that God has rescued him. And then it says, not only is he thankful to God, but he's thankful to Abigail, because both of them have saved him from himself. And since Abigail is without a husband now, he sends after her and asks her to be his wife. And she's honored and she says, yes, I will definitely be his wife. And it says she takes 5 maidservants with her, goes with his messengers, and becomes David's wife. Now, in the meantime, remember that David had a wife named Michal, but that was Saul's daughter. And when David fled from Saul, Saul gave Michal to another man in marriage. And so he has lost her. And in the meantime, before he even knew about Abigail, he married another woman from Jezreel. And so now he has 2 wives, this woman from Jezreel and Abigail, and he has lost Michal. And so that is how chapter 25 ends. So let's go back for a minute and talk about Abigail and this very delicate situation that she's found herself in between these 2 hot-headed men and how she deals with it. Because sometimes we need to save other people from themselves, right? And so the first thing that we see about Abigail is that she knows both of these men. She knows that her husband is stingy and difficult and most likely a little jealous of David, because David is the one that's been doing something for his shepherds that he wasn't able to do. And so she knows what kind of person he is. She also knows that when he gets like this, There's no talking to him. You know, there's no reasoning with him, no reason to confront him. It's just going to provoke him further. And she also knows that time is of the essence. And so she understands this man that she's dealing with. That's the first thing that we notice. She not only knows what he's like, but she knows when to talk and when not to. And she realizes no point in discussing this with him right now. She also realizes when she comes home that whenever he's drunk, that's definitely not a time to tell him everything that has happened. And so she is wise in her dealings with her husband because she knows what kind of person he is, and she knows how to deal with that. But she also knows what kind of man David is. And so the first thing that she does is find out what was David asking for and can she meet this need? And she can give him the food that he has asked for. And it looks like she goes above and beyond, you know, giving him a ton of food. And so she's kind of coming to him with gifts, trying to kind of butter him up, get him in a good mood. Right from the start, she also does this by bowing down to him because she knows that her husband has disrespected him. And so she pays him honor right off the bat, giving him the two things that her husband did not give and letting him know that, you know, she's going to treat him differently and she's going to pay him the honor that he deserves and give him the things that he's asked for. And then, even though she doesn't know David personally, she knows what kind of man he is. And she makes sure that he realizes that he knows that too, because that's the other thing that Nabal didn't give to him. He said, I don't even know David. And she's like, I know exactly who you are. You are the warrior that has been fighting for us on behalf of the Lord, your God. And I know that you care about God. I know that you want to please him. And I also know that Saul has been seeking your life. He has been trying to do you evil, and you have returned his evil with good. And so I am appealing to the man that I believe you are, the man that doesn't return evil with evil. And I'm asking you to do the same thing. So she's not patronizing him. She's not saying, you know, oh, you're better than this, you know, because nobody wants to hear that. FYI, when you talk to people like that and say, oh, you're better than that, you know, that's talking down to them. She didn't say it to him. She just let him know that she knows he is better than this. You know, she knows what kind of man he is. And so she's not condemning him for what he's doing. She's understanding him. Immediately she says, I get it. My husband was wrong. Makes no excuses for him. And then seems to sympathize with David for what he wants to do to Nabal. But then she's like, but I know that that's not what you want to do. You know, you in your heart want to do that right now, but I know that the kind of man you are is not the kind of man that would do this. And so she is appealing to the kind of person that she knows him to be and encouraging him to be that person. And I think as a woman, that's the most difficult part of what she did, is trying to encourage him to be the man that she knows that he is without patronizing him. And I think the reason that she's successful in it is because she's not, like I said, talking down to him, but she's also letting him know that she has his best interest at heart. You know, she's trying to reveal to him, hey, I want you to rise above, not because it's the right thing and I want you to be a better person and all of that, but because I don't want you to approach the throne with guilt. You know, I want you to be able to become the king with clean hands, knowing that you've trusted God and you haven't taken matters into your own hands. And so I think that's why she was successful in letting him know that she's not condemning him and that she's not patronizing him, but that she has his best interest at heart. She's not doing this for Nabal's sake. She's doing it for David's sake. And when we approach people, letting them know, hey, I'm coming to you saying something that you may not want to hear, but it is because I care about you. It's not because I'm trying to take up for someone else or say that they don't deserve that or say that you're a bad person for doing this. It's because I know later you're going to regret it. And so I'm trying to save you from yourself. I'm trying to help you out before you make a mistake because I care about you. And when we come at it in that regard, saying we get it, but we're trying to help them out, I think that that's when people will see, oh, she does have my best interest at heart. She's not doing this with any ulterior motive. She's not doing it for herself. She's not doing it for that other person. She actually is caring about me. And we're going to talk about that further in the blog post. The blog post is going to kind of go through how Abigail dealt with these two men and maybe how we can deal with someone that's being difficult and, you know, try to say the right thing in the right way. And so if you're listening to this in real time, I am behind on the blog post. So just bear with me, pay attention, because when we get to that, it'll be a little bit more precise about how we can be more a little more like Abigail. But for now, I just want to read you some verses that talk about, you know, saying the right thing in the right way at the right time. And so the first one is Proverbs 10:12, and it says, "Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses." And so that's what she's doing. She is trying to, you know, be loving to these two men and cover their offenses with that and not coming to them with, you know, a bad attitude. And then in Proverbs 15:1-2, it says, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And so that's what she's doing, right? She's talking to him softly so that she does not, you know, make things worse. How often do we do this, right? How often do we, you know, escalate the situation as opposed to de-escalating just because we are, you know, matching that person's energy, you know? When they're rude, then we're rude. When they're speaking, you know, in a harsh manner, then we're doing the same. When they're yelling, we're yelling. And so it's saying, don't do that because you're just going to make things worse. And then in verse 2, it says, "The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness." So you use the information that you get in the right way if you are wise. And that's what Abigail did. She got this information about what her husband had done, and she's using it in a wise way. And then in verse 18 of chapter 15, it says, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention." So obviously that's what we want to be, and that's how we can keep things from escalating. And then in Proverbs 16:20-24, it says, "Whoever gives thought to the word will discover good, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. The wise of heart is called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. Good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instructions of fools is folly. The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body." That is what Abigail was, right? She was discerning. She was kind. She was persuasive. And, you know, persuasion does work a lot better than, you know, forcefulness or harshness. It works a lot better if you want someone to do what you are asking for them to do, to persuade them that they need to act differently. And then in Proverbs 17:14, it says, "The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts." So we want to be able to de-escalate the situation. And that's what she did. She, you know, realized ahead of time and she was able to, you know, stop it before it got out of hand. Proverbs 18:21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." Proverbs 23:9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the good sense of your words. That's what Abigail was doing with Nabal. She's like, no point in trying to reason with him. You know, if I go to him and ask him to do this thing, then he's probably going to refuse and I'm just going to make him mad. And then he's going to forbid me and it's all going to be a bad deal. And so there's no point in trying to reason with someone when they are in a, you know, unreasonable state. And so better to wait until they are easier to talk to than to do it whenever you know that they're, you know, in the heat of their anger or just really frustrated in some way at the moment. And then Proverbs 26:4 says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will also be like him. So don't talk to him in the same way that he's talking to you. Don't be harsh to him, yell at him, be mean, say the same types of things, do the same types of things, because it's only going to escalate the situation. And then in Proverbs 26:21, it says, as charcoal is to burning coals and wood is to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So when you see someone already mad, don't add fuel to the fire. That's what he's saying there. And then in Proverbs 30:33, it says, for the churning of milk produces butter, and the pressing of the nose produces blood, so does the churning of anger produce strife. So again, not provoking the person that is already upset. And then the last verse, Romans 14:19 says, so then we pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another. That's also what Abigail did. She was trying to pursue peace, and then she went to David and she built him up. So God has used Abigail to keep David from taking matters into his own hands. And once David stopped taking things into his own hands, then God took the matter into his hands. God took care of it once David backed off. Notice that. God did not take care of the situation until David yielded his power to the Lord, until he said, I'm going to back off. I'm not going to handle this. What reason does God have to handle the situation if we're handling it, right? And so if David would have continued to pursue his way, then he would not have probably seen the salvation of the Lord. God would not have saved him because David was taking care of it. But when David backed off, then God was able to take care of the situation for him. And God obviously did it in a much better way. If David would have done it, then Nabal would have been dead either way. But David would have also killed the rest of the men of the town. And so he would have had a guilty conscience. But whenever he yielded to God and said, this is not my thing, I'm not going to do this, I'm going to leave this up to you, Lord, then God said, good, thank you. That's all I wanted. I wanted to save you, but I needed you to back off and let me do it. And so we need to yield to God and let him take care of us. God wants to take care of us, but sometimes we won't get out of the way. We are working to do this thing on our own, and all the while God is saying, if you'll just stop, I've got this. I can take care of it, and I can obviously do it in a better way than you if you will just back off, yield to me, let me do my job, right? But sometimes we don't want to do that. Sometimes we are too stubborn and we're too frustrated. And thankfully, David listened to Abigail and let him save him from himself. And so we need to be that same kind of person that is attentive to God's delays and listens to reason, right? We don't want to take matters into our own hands. We need to be able to yield the way to God and let him handle things, align ourselves with him by making sure that we do things his way and not our own way, right? Leave room for him to work on our behalf, and that will keep us from sinning. And so I want to read you three or four more verses and then we'll close. The first one is in Psalm 19:13, and it says, "Keep your servant back from presumptuous sins and don't let them rule over me. And then I will be innocent and I will be blameless of great wrongdoing." And so that's what we want, right? We want God to keep us away from these sins that we're doing premeditative, you know, the things that we know better than to do, but we just, they're ruling over us. He says, don't let those things rule over us. Don't let us give in to those things, God. Help us in that situation. That's what God did by sending Abigail to David, and we want God to do the same thing for us. And then in Proverbs 3, 5 and 6, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your paths." That is us yielding to him. If we'll do that, then he'll show us the way, you know, but we have to yield to him. And then the last one, Proverbs 17:13, and it says, "Whoever rewards evil for good, evil will not depart from his house." So we have to know that if people are returning our good with evil, then God will deal evil with them. He will return it back on their head, just as he did for Nabal. So we just need to get out of the way. Don't take care of things ourselves. So that's all we have for today. I hope that this has encouraged you to listen to reason if someone else is trying to save you from yourself. And maybe it's given you a few tools to save other people from themselves whenever they need it, because we all need somebody that loves us enough to come to us and say, "Hey, you don't want to do that. Let's think this thing through." And so if you're in Abigail's situation and you need help, you know, doing that, then go to God and let God give you the wisdom to know when and how to deal with the situation, because some people are more difficult than others. And sometimes we just need some guidance. And so go to God and say, "God, I care about this person and I want to help them, but I don't know how. And I need your help." And then if someone does come to you and says, "Hey, hold off, let's think this thing through. I don't think that you want to really do this," then listen to them. Let it be a lesson that maybe God is trying to stop you so that you will turn things over to him as opposed to taking them into your own hands. And so that's all I have for you today. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And then if you want this lesson in written form, go to livethroughjesus.substack.com. There you can become either a free subscriber or a paid subscriber. The paid subscribers get this lesson written out for them. The free subscribers will get the blog post that goes along with this lesson. I also teach those blog posts on a separate YouTube and podcast channel called Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions. So go and subscribe to that channel so that you can listen to the blog posts being taught. They're much shorter than these episodes because we don't go through the whole lesson, just the things that we need to learn from it. And then subscribe to livethroughjesus.substack.com as a free subscriber and get those blog posts, or as a paid subscriber and get these lessons that you can do on your own or with a Bible study group. If you do it on your own, digital is great because you can click on the passages and then you will just see them right there from your device. You don't have to flip through your Bible. You can change them to whatever Bible version you want and really get into a deep study. And then if you do them with a group, it's a great way to do it very cheaply because everybody doesn't have to buy their own book. You can just get one subscription and then print out all the material you want. So that's only $6 a month or $60 a year. So it's way less expensive than everybody getting their own book. And then also subscribe to me on social media at Live Through Jesus, not my name, Live Through Jesus. That's where clips from this podcast will be, and then also where I'll post verses and things. So make sure you subscribe, and then I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.